Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
As we head into the 9 o'clock hour, get used to this. Every Tuesday at 9 o'clock throughout the football season, we will be joined by former Pro Bowl offensive lineman and Texans legend,
oh yeah,
Wade Smith.
We're owning it.
That's what you got to do.
The listeners have been overwhelmingly positive about saying we should own that, calling ourselves Texans legends. We don't call ourselves that. No. That's what the NFL is doing when they talk about their NFL alumni or retired players. They're calling them legends.
Yeah.
And it feels really weird. But the listeners keep saying, like, overwhelmingly on the text line that we should be comfortable with being called legends.
If it's on a T-shirt, it's got to be true. Wade, you were out there yesterday. Were you rocking your Texans legend T-shirt?
I was. Actually, I had the Legends polo on, because the T-shirt that they sent out to our house, it didn't get to my house in time, so I wasn't matching everybody else. I had like a red polo on, and everybody else.
That's all right.
It's a little uppity.
I felt like I was kind of standing out, like I was an elitist, better than everybody. But
I had a Nike Dry Fit V-neck on. Don't worry about that. It was blue. So
yeah, at least you matched.
Yeah.
You were blue. I was in all red.
When we came in, they let all the players go down to the other end of the practice bubble where you could just sit and watch practice up close, like not where the press is. And it was kind of weird. Like at first I was getting nervous because I'm like, I'm kind of like, I'm the press. Like that, I was like, wait, they don't really like me that much around here. So I had to like hide my press pass and everything and sneak on
it. Stick it inside your shirt.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I told Seth as we were walking down the sideline. I was like, look, we get to game the system a little bit today since we're legends today. So we can get we can get closer to the action. We can see everything that's going on and not in the necessarily in the media section where you don't have as good of a view.
Yeah. Well, as Seth and I pointed out earlier this week, if you ever want to throw people off the scent that may get nervous that you're a media member but also a former player, just do what Bruce Wayne did and just use a different voice when you're a Texans legend. When you're around the other legends, just go, hey, Trap J.
Trap.
It was sure fun playing with you back in 2005. You were a really good first-round pick. Remember that time in 2011 when our offensive line led the way for Arian Foster to the Pro Bowl? That was great. And then just use your normal voice when you're doing media stuff like this show. I prefer that you use this voice that you're using right now on the show because this is more of an auditory thing.
I completely agree with you on that.
So,
but it was weird seeing Andre Hale out there because he's been retired for all of 4 months.
He's a legend.
He's so young, man.
I know. So it was young. Not weird in a bad way. It was just like all of a sudden there's a little bit of a disconnect there when you then also realize how old you are. Like Anthony Weaver talked about, he was joking with you when you interviewed him about how the first thing he noticed was that guys hadn't aged too well. Like everybody's
a lot of gray hair and
limps. Got a limp. I told Anthony, I was like, you got to watch it, man. You're real close because he injured himself lifting a washer or a dryer. You got to watch it because you're real close to being the age where you could be that coach that's always walking around the facility with a limp. And it's almost like you get a measure of respect for it.
Yeah.
But you also, like, that's the beginning of the end because that's when you start getting crotchety, too. Because that limp's always got you angry about something.
Have you had a... you're in much better shape now than you were as a player, Wade. Like, at least you're like lighter weight. I mean, you were in good shape as a player for what you needed to do as an offensive lineman. Have you had a moment like Anthony Weaver did, where post retirement you've had to lift something heavy and you're like, wait a second, I'm not who I used to be?
Yeah, that happens every day, bro. that's every day.
It's called every day that ends in Y.
Every day that ends in Y. Yeah. I'm like, damn, it's just not the same. And you know, my body doesn't hurt as bad as far as like my knees walking up and down stairs. I don't have to make a conscious decision like, is it worth it to go upstairs or not? Because it was used to be in so much pain. But when you try to, you know, you try to do the things that you used to do. I coach youth football, and sometimes you're trying to demonstrate drills for kids, and you feel it. And it's like, yeah, I don't feel the same the way I used to feel.
The only thing that gets easier to lift is your wallet. That's the
yes.
The good thing is as you get older, you decide not to lift your wallets quite as much.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
You know what I mean? So it's
it actually
when you
heavier.
Actually do it. Yeah, it comes heavier.
You get stingy right quick.
That's right. Go.
That's probably one of the, you know, talking to, when I talked to Cushing at the Texas Sports Award, what do we call that? The Houston
Sports Awards.
Houston Sports Awards. Awards,
yeah.
That was right after he had agreed to come back and coach. And I could tell he was at that point where he'd been retired for a full season and then had gone through the off season, and we talked a little bit about how, like, that's when it hits you full, like, in the face, like, oh, I've got to actually do something with my life now. Like, I can't just be sitting around and, like, maybe, like, doing a little bit of charity work here or there or something. Like, I got to actually go commit myself to something. Because Cushing's wired that way, too, you know? Like, Cushing's not going to be a guy that's going to be comfortable just going out and playing golf every day. Like, no. He's got to have something to focus on.
Okay, yeah. Cushing looks like he could whoop everybody's ass at practice. So, at the very least, he's been working out since he was retired.
So, listen, did you see Cushing when they were doing drills out there yesterday with the linebackers and he was playing running back?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
It was hilarious because the ball looks so tiny because his arms are so big, like they're bigger than they used to be now.
He looks like an action hero.
He really does.
Yeah, like he's got like a chiseled face. Like I think he's leaner than when he played because like he doesn't have to go out and run so much. He's probably just like living like a bodybuilder, just lifting weights and doing a little bit of cardio.
And then you add that with what they do over there with the nutrition to where like, there is literally no unhealthy foods in the facilities anymore. I was talking to Dre about that yesterday. Dre is just like, man, everything is either gluten-free. It's like, you know, there's no grease. There's nothing negative that you can put in your body over at the facility anymore.
You know, Andre actually looks leaner, too.
Everybody.
Like, anybody that spends time in that facility.
Yeah, TJ, all of them. Yeah. I'm thinking of TJ.
TJ, I know. Looks lean.
Like, everybody, I'm like, man, they're on a great diet over here. Just because there's no options of eating anything that is unhealthy over there at NRG.
Not even vending machines?
No.
Maybe I need to get into
even
coaching.
The Gatorades that they have over there, like the
G2? Healthy,
the low calorie ones. Yeah.
That's crazy. Wait, so.
Oh, dude, that Gatorade will get you because you listen to all the Gatorade propaganda because they give it to you early in the training camp, like, oh, hey, the folks from Gatorade are here to tell you how awesome Gatorade is. So you're like, all right, looks like I better drink 18 of these a day or I'm going to cramp up and die.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're like, everybody always asks, like, how do you keep weight on during training camp? Gatorade. I drink 18 Gatorades a day.
Yeah.
It's like soda.
Yeah, it is. Sodium, water retention. Wade Smith is in studio with us for his weekly visit. All right, Wade, so you were in with us on Friday, so we already talked a little bit about the Packer game, but over the weekend there was a padded practice. There were a couple practices. Won a padded practice on Sunday where I feel like the concern level over left tackle with this team increased over the weekend. Are we at threat level midnight on the left tackle position right now?
I would say no, man. I think if you were concerned about the left tackle position, you should have been concerned back when they first signed Matt Khalil and said, gave you the idea and the impression that he was going to be the guy.
But I was. But he had,
okay, so
Seth
then,
was.
I was willing to be wrong. I was like, all right, listen, okay, I'm going to let you do this. You got a Titus Howard. You got a young rookie.
Wrong, I don't want to be right.
but see, in my mind, I was just like, well, hell, this is the way they're going to go because I was the biggest fan on bringing in somebody in here that you could trust. You could throw him in that position and not worry about him. I was the biggest proponent of bringing in Trent Brown. Like, bring in Trent Brown, he'll be your left tackle. You don't have to worry about it. When they went a different route, it's like, all right, you're going to get somebody in here that is going to be okay at times, and then sometimes you're going to be like, damn, we need somebody that can hold down the position. And so that's where we are now. I don't think you can look at Matt Khalil and say, you know what, this dude is trash, and so we have to make a move right now. It's like, no, he's going to, for the most part, against guys that are just like average guys, he's going to do fine against average guys. Against top-notch guys, he's going to struggle, and so you're going to have to game plan in those situations to handle the top-notch pass rushers. Now, if you had somebody like Trent Brown or Trent Williams, you don't care about who you throw over there against them. You just let them go to work, and you can worry about everybody else. And that was why I was such a big proponent.
Like Trent Brown handled Jadeveon Clowney pretty much one-on-one the entire Patriots game. Like, and had a really good game versus Jadeveon Clowney. Is he helped by Tom Brady getting rid of the ball quickly? Yes. But Trent Brown did like what Matt Khalil certainly would not be able to do versus Jadeveon Clowney. I guess, Wade, where I am is that I've seen enough. I had the same image in my mind as what you were talking about, just kind of a journeyman left tackle that's going to come in and be able to do the job. After watching in practice and then after watching in that game versus the Green Bay backup defense, they only had one starter playing on defense. That's where I started to get nervous that, okay, the bad might far outweigh the good here. Like, I just don't know how strong Matt Khalil is anymore after all his injuries and everything, to where I'm worried that it's going to be more consistently the bad Matt Khalil veteran player than, like, okay, just a mediocre guy.
So I didn't see that practice. I guess it was Saturday.
Sunday.
Padded practice, where he was kind of struggling in practice. What I saw in the actual Packer game was First of all, the footing on the field was terrible.
Yeah.
So there was a bunch of guys slipping all over the place. So you saw the play where he was on skates, just sliding backwards, even though he was in good position, but he's just getting pushed back. To me, that is a field problem and not a Matt Khalil problem.
I'm with you on that one because I saw the same thing with a few players. Like, Tywan Jones went to plant and, like, slid like he was wearing socks on linoleum.
QT. Right.
For, like, three. Yeah, QT on that one, too. So I'm with you on that one. What about on the play where he got called for holding?
To me, that was just him being lazy. You know what I mean? Like,
is that supposed to make me feel better?
Yes.
It's supposed to make me feel better because himself.
You look at it from this perspective. He's a veteran, right? In his first preseason game. Like, think about yourself as a veteran in the first preseason game. Were you playing at the same level and intensity as you would if it was week one?
You're trying to get into it. You're worried about technical things, and you're kind of, like, looking at it. It feels almost like a practice. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, like I said, I'm not capping for Matt Khalil because, like I said, coming in here, he was not my ideal candidate for the job. But I don't think what I saw from him in the actual Packer game is going to make me be alarmist and say, you know what, we got to make a deal. I think that the Texans should have made a deal and still should make a deal for Trent Williams because of a plethora of other reasons, not because Matt Khalil is going to be terrible all year.
Go ahead, Seth.
Well, I went back. Well, no, that's all right. I was going to ask a Max Sharpen question.
Okay, well, let's save it for the next segment because I just want to get a – because you mentioned Trent Williams. Does Bill O'Brien making the deal for Duke Johnson, in which he may have overpaid slightly, whatever, does that make you think that he might be more inclined to make a Trent Williams deal between now and the beginning of the season?
No question about it, because Duke Johnson was somebody that we talked about, I talked about, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. As soon as it came out that he was – available, he was asking for a trade, I was like, he would be a perfect fit here in Houston. And so back then, Brian Gain, he wasn't really doing much. And so you kind of didn't get your hopes up thinking that he was going to actually make a move. And as soon as Brian Gain's out the door, now Bill O'Brien makes a move. And you think about it, Bill O'Brien, it comes out that they've been working on that deal for a long time. Do I think they were working on that deal when Brian Gain was still here? I don't think so. I think that as soon as Brian Gain was out the building, that was probably one of the moves where Bill O'Brien is saying, like, this is a guy that I want here, and we weren't doing anything to get him here. Now let's start working on getting him here. And so that makes me believe that, you know, if he's thinking somewhat like the way I'm thinking, then there's a chance that he's going to go out there and get Trent Williams.
Schefter said that several teams have called the Redskins. Do you think the Texans are one of those teams?
I think they are one of those teams, and I also think the fact that Schefter says that, you know, they're not going to trade him, I just feel like everybody has a price, and I think that's their way of trying to drive up the price of the people that are making offers, including the Texans, and saying, like, listen, y'all can't come at me with, you know, a 3 and a 5. Y'all need to come at me with a first rounder. You need to come at me with a 2 and a 3 or something to sweeten the pot because, like I said, everybody has a price.
There you go. That's look at Wade Smith quoting Ted DiBiase. I like that.
That's what I did. That's how I created an auction environment when I was in high school, when I told the ladies, no, I will not be losing my virginity anytime soon. I refuse.
That's how you create demand.
I refuse. Demand. Yeah. That's right. And
Did you do it while naked, standing in the middle of the cafeteria?
Clamoring for me. No, I left it to the imagination.
Okay. The thing about that, you just said.
A timeless art of seduction.
There are some 9th, 10th, and 11th graders out there that are sitting there listening to this right now because school hasn't started yet. And you know what? I'm going to try.
Good job,
well, no,
sir.
Listen, guys in general, not that specifically, but you don't want to be available. You don't want to be the guy that's easily attained, okay? You need to be the mysterious dude that's unattainable.
Wade Smith in studio with us for one more segment, as he will be each and every Tuesday. It'd be nice. We will have games to break down each week with Wade. He was already with us on Friday, so we dug into that Packers game, but the Lions coming up this week, and so next Tuesday, 9 o'clock, we'll break down what we saw in the second preseason game. You wanted to ask Wade about Max Sharping.
So. I guess Max Sharping and both the rookies, because I talked to you off air about Max Sharping, and then when I went back and watched the game, I started to see more of what you were pointing out. Because I'm right now with Max Sharping, I like a lot of things he's doing. I'd like to see him use his power more, but you made the good point that he hasn't yet looked like he's being overpowered, or he doesn't. Like, he's had a couple bad snaps, obviously, but he doesn't look like he's being overpowered, so it might just be a matter of time where he really gets to learn how to use his leverage.
Yeah, that's just a matter of building your confidence as a player. I think he's very cerebral. Everything that I'm hearing from the various people over there at Texans camp is that he's damn near like Rain Man.
Yeah, TJ over there was kind of talking about him in a way that was really... You know, it wasn't like TJ was talking to Wade and me as the press. He was just talking about like this kid's freaking smart.
Yeah, he basically is like, you know, you put him up on the board and he just runs through various formations and understands schematically what people are trying to do and not just his position. And so I think that translates on the field because first of all, he understands the scheme. He understands the various angles he needs to take in order to get blocks. I always thought that from what I've seen so far, Max Sharpen is the best offensive lineman on the Texans of working double team blocks, which you would never expect out of a rookie. But he does a good job of fitting in into his double team blocks. And that's part of understanding how to do that is understanding what we're trying to get accomplished out of working this double team.
Yeah.
And so I think he's one of those guys that figured that out early. I think that once he continues to get confidence as a player and knows he can kind of shoot his gun and just completely let it all hang out, then I think that you're going to see him start having those plays where he's dominating guys. I mean, he's a big guy. He's a big, strong guy, and he's going to be in the interior. And so some of his deficiencies that you might see in his footwork is not going to be exposed if he was out there at tackle.
Right, right.
And so him being a guard, I think it's a really good situation for him.
What about Titus Howard at tackle?
Titus Howard, he definitely has the footwork to be a tackle. I think that Titus Howard, you're going to have to understand that he is a guy that's only played offensive line for 3.5 years in his life, you know, in his entire life. And so now he's playing at the top, he's playing with the cream of the crop. And so he's going to fall over himself sometimes. He's going to go to the second level and miss guys, and his angles are going to be off a little bit because he has to still figure out and figure out the game. You know what I mean? And so that's the big reason why I was a proponent of not starting him at left tackle, even though he has the athletic ability to do it. And he has the temperament to do it. You still have to be a football player. Like, you still have to understand the game and understand the angles and understand, you know, when I need to go fast, when I need to slow down, control your body, all of those different things. And that comes with time and experience. And so him playing left guard, I think, is a much better situation for him as opposed to him playing left tackle.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Seth yesterday. What is the percentage chance you think that the Texans, with Titus Howard in the first round this year and Max Sharping in the second round, the percentage chance that they have found two offensive linemen that they will be willing to commit to beyond just a rookie contract?
Oh, man.
Percentage chance that they're both here in 5 years on new deals.
You know why that's a tough question? Let's say if Bill O'Brien is still the head coach in 5 years, then I say it's like 75-80%. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's very, very high. But if you get a new
staff, what's your answer? Because now I'll get the feel for how much you think Bill O'Brien's going to be the head coach here.
5 years, that would end up being 11 years.
In the NFL, 5 years is a really long time. And the problem is when you get a new regime in here, I don't care how good you are, they get rid of you. Brandon Brooks should still be here. You know what I mean? We're having issues at certain positions, but because it was a new regime that came in, it wasn't their guy. So now he's going to be all pro with the Eagles. And that's just the way the NFL works. So I would say that if Bill O'Brien is here, it's 85%, right? If it goes the way that the NFL goes, I would say the chances of them both being here might be like, you know, 30%.
Yeah. You know, there are exceptions. If you're an exceptional player, like Dwayne Brown survived just fine when Bill O'Brien got here. You know, Chris Myers was towards the end of his run.
Chris Myers was here for a year. Brandon Brooks was here for a year.
Yeah.
Ben Jones was here for a year.
Yep.
And they were all gone.
They were all gone. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, no, that's just the way it works. And then that's the big thing when you look at it from the player's perspective. You're like, listen, man, when you're in the building and you have your people in place that put you here, make sure you take advantage of that, because if it goes the other way, it's going to go all the way the other way. There's only like the J.J. Watts of the world that I don't care what coaching staff you put them with, they're going to hold on to that guy. You know what I mean? The DeAndre Hopkins. There's only like a handful of guys that's the truth for. You know what I mean? Yeah. Other guys, you're fighting for scraps and you're fighting for, you know, the opportunity to still be with the same organization, yeah. especially when you're a younger guy and you're getting ready to get paid.
Well, and of those guys, Howard is the guy you would hope fits into that sort of foundational, you know, can transcend whatever coaching staff comes in, because you use the 23rd pick in the draft on him, right?
Yeah, and I think Howard, his skill set definitely does lend you to believe that he could play for anybody.
Right.
But like I said, if you get another, like I said, Brandon Brooks is...
He's the classic example.
He's 6'5", 335, strong as an ox, really good athlete, and he's not here.
Yeah.
So, and you know, if you're not their type of guy, you're not that type of guy, and you won't be here.
What about Roderick Johnson, the offensive tackle that's been backing up both the left and right tackle spot?
Every time I see the kid go out there, man, he's just solid. Man, he's solid. And they'll put him out there with the one sometimes in practice, and he's solid. You know what I mean? He doesn't do anything magnificent, but he's not getting beat. And he's going against top-notch guys. He's going against, you know, sometimes he's going against Whitney. He's going against Scarlett. He's going against veteran guys, and he's doing well. And, what I'm getting is that he's going to be, you know, right now he's in the rotation of being like the swing guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you would have never thought that about Roderick Johnson, you know, 3-4 months ago. You would have thought he's just a camp body.
And he's a guy, too, especially because he's not a great athlete. And when you watch him out in practice with no pads, he's not going to stick out to you. And those are the guys, a lot of times, that's when you got to really see if a coaching staff is paying attention. Because sometimes coaching staffs will make judgments based on no pad stuff and kind of not see what's right in front of their face when all of a sudden guys are putting the pads on or doing really well.
Right.
I'll credit the Texans coaching staff for recognizing it because Roderick Johnson's come out at, like, I don't think this time last year, I don't think that they were actually whenever they picked Roderick Johnson up midway through the year, whenever. Yeah. I don't think they ever thought that he was going to look like he is right now. And they've recognized it, and they're moving him up the charts.
You know, the thing that I really like about Roderick Johnson is that he is 6'7", 6'8", whatever how tall he is, and he doesn't play tall.
No, he does not play tall. Yeah, actually, it was kind of a shock when you said that he was 6'7".
Yeah, I mean, he's a really tall guy. Yeah. I did a charity event. I think it was like a Texans Care event with the Texans earlier this offseason. And I'm like, that's a tall-ass dude. Looks like a basketball player.
And you're saying in a good way he doesn't play like a tall guy,
right? He doesn't play like a tall guy.
Like, guys don't get up under him.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show on Friday about how we have the Texans have, five or six guys that are over 6'6".
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult for them to play with leverage. And so I think Roger Johnson does a good job of playing with leverage and understanding that, you know, low man wins, even though it's a cliche. You know, if you're playing high, it's much more difficult to get your guys blocked, get guys moved off the ball, and be a good pass protector if you're really high in your stance. And he does a good job of using his length but also playing low.
Wade Smith in with us for a couple more minutes here. Before we let you go, Wade, what do you think is going through Jadeveon Clowney's mind right now?
I think he's getting himself prepared for this season. I think that he's listening to all the chatter as far as, you know, the different trade rumors or whatever. But I think in his mind, that the bottom line of the situation is that I'm going to get paid. It might not be here in Houston, but I'm going to get paid. And I'm, you know, he's doing his work with the Chuck Smith camp or whatever out there, the D-line camp. And he's working on his moves because he knows that this year is a big year for him. If he hits, you know, 12, 13 sacks, he knows that he makes that many more millions of dollars when he does get his deal. And so I think he's thinking about that, keeping himself in shape. And, you know, I would like to believe that he's going to do that here in Houston, but, you know, everything around me is saying that it's not going to be the case. And so that's another guy that I think is, you know, similar to the Brandon Brooks and the Glover Quinns and the guys like that of the world that you think that should have stayed with the organization. They ended up getting out the door.
You know what I get nervous about is, and I don't think this would happen in this situation, and I'm not saying that Clowney would be the kind of guy that would do this, but when you continually dangle a guy out in trade discussions and you make it very clear that you don't like him long term, let's say you get to week 11 or week 12 and you tweak your hamstring a little bit. What incentive is there for Jadeveon Clowney to do right for the team that desperately doesn't want him around? To go out there and do it for the team,
yeah,
doesn't feel the same. Well, when that team is constantly trying to get rid of you,
yeah,
like right up till the trade deadline.
I can see that perspective. I look at it like this as a player, and this is my teammate.
You know
what I mean? That part of it does matter. You know what I mean? As far as it's like, listen, this is week 11, week 12. We're in a playoff push. We need you. You know, come out here and let's get it done. Let's push through it and get it done. But I completely understand it from the business perspective.
Right. Well, and I don't think Clowney, especially because of his injury history, he has to prove that he can play. I don't think it would be an issue, but I don't like even inviting that kind of scenario. That's where the casually dangling a guy out in trade talks constantly starts to weigh on your brain, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Wade Smith, we appreciate you coming in. I'll see you on Saturday.
No question.
Post-game show.
Well, actually, yeah, Saturday we'll be there after the show. Well, I'll be there training camp tomorrow, so we'll be able to look at, you know, the Packers and Green Bay. I mean, excuse me, not the Packers, but Detroit and the Texans out there. So that'll be a good time, and it's always real, fellas.
All right, there it is. Wade Smith.
Thanks, buddy.
Going to join us each and every Tuesday throughout the season here on Payne and Pendergast.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.